Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup, and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Oh, Donna Adelson, it's been an interesting first handful of days here in the trial. We've seen a lot of people come and go off that stand. It's had a distinctly different vibe, I think, than the Charlie Adelson trial where we saw the family being a little more, I don't know, it felt a little more tight-knit than this. This time around, it seems that everyone is out for themselves. Joining me to discuss, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author of several books, Nightbird, her new memoir. It's out right now, wherever you get books, in the minds of mass killers. Siobhan, we're watching quite an extraordinary first handful of days, like I said, in this trial. Donna Adelson's own children, Wendy, and the elusive Robert, who we haven't seen much of, they were up on the stand. And instead of circling the wagons, we're watching the fissures pretty much open up. Wendy still tangled and conflicted. Robert, blunt, almost cold in how he describes his mother's control. It's a family unraveling in public. I want to talk about what happens when children of narcissistic parents or parent finally starts turning against them. When you see the adult children testifying in ways that clearly undercut their mother, what does it tell you about how deeply the control is breaking down?
I think it's a wonderful thing because you're watching, you know, in real time, the individuation process of these adult offspring, the Adelson kids. And that's really what gives them the best hope for the future is being able to separate from their mother because they've had decades of her attempting to control them with emotional manipulation and likely hysterical behavior. So looking at it from that vantage point as a clinician, this is really a good thing.
How often do we see this take place where finally some of the kids or all of the kids are finally saying, you know what, I'm getting on the lifeboat, I'm out of here. Obviously, a lot has happened before they finally did jump in that lifeboat. But is this common to see the break off with a family that was this strongly enmeshed all the way to the point of murder?
It varies. Often, if there are multiple kids in the family, you'll find one or two that differentiate themselves from the family and separate and often then move far away and don't want anything to do with the parent or at least have lots of distance. But it's also common to have one that stays very enmeshed and always is the caregiver. And that's usually the kid as the parents become elderly, that's the one that moves in with them and tries to take care of them. And so you often see in one family group, both patterns happening at the same time.
The fun part is, I think the one that's going to be moving in with Donna is going to be named Big Bertha, and she will do nice things for you for extra packs of Pall Malls. So I don't think it's going to be Wendy or anybody helping Donna the way this this trial is going so far. I want to talk about Robert. He's the oldest. He's the one that we haven't seen a whole lot. We knew Charlie. We knew Wendy. We knew Robert existed, but we haven't seen a whole lot from him. He's the one who was the oldest, I believe, 4 years, 3 to 4 years, a bit older than Charlie. And very early on at 18, he moved out, started his life, and pretty much never looked back, never came back, moved far away from Florida and mom and dad and the brother and the sister, ended up in New York as the ENT, where he is practicing now, and has certainly kept a distance. When it comes to an enmeshed family like this, is there a certain dynamic that we see with different order of children from the oldest to the youngest in terms of how they are affected by an individual like Adana and her controlling ways?
I don't think there's anything that we've been able to identify as far as birth order. It can vary wildly just depending on the individuals, because, you know, everybody's got a different personality. And even if they were raised in the same home with the same parents, people can end up with very opposite personalities and life paths.
Robert has really not shone away on the stand from calling Donna what he's observed. He hasn't been playing Wendy. We'll talk about Wendy in a little bit. Wendy's the I don't remember. He's calling her out as controlling, running the show. Wendy still seeming somewhat defensive, not having a very good memory, and still kind of playing down mom and the extremes of what she is alleged to have gone to. Why do siblings differ so much in some of this? Wendy still seeming defensive. Why do they diverge so sharply in how they handle a narcissistic parent?
Yeah, Wendy clearly is kind of trying to walk that tightrope of being truthful. She appears to be truthful in her mm-hmm. testimony, but at the same time doing some caretaking. And my guess is it's about mom's feelings, because I would guess that there's a history of mom becoming very angry or hysterical, or angry and hysterical when she's confronted with something that she does not like. And Wendy clearly still has more of an emotional tie-in with her. And why that is, you know, it could be that girls, this is just me speculating, I've never seen data on it, but mm-hmm. but girls tend to be more connected with mom and more caught up in the caretaking to try to keep her happy.
She hasn't, and she admitted this on the stand the other day, that she has not been in contact with mom since 2023, when Charlie was sentenced. Apparently, she was very upset, distraught, disappointed that Wendy did not take more of her brother's side and kind of toe the family line. And after that, they have not spoken, according to Wendy. So it seems that a line somewhat has been drawn. Obviously, it would probably have been more of the choice of Wendy to try and reach out, considering Donna's been in prison for most of that time, or jail for most of that time. But what does that tell you about the bonds breaking, about the silence there between the two, who seemingly, you know, had been very tight all the way where mom was controlling every aspect of her life?
Yeah, I was raised my eyebrows at picking out potential dates for her, mm-hmm. making a dating profile on a dating app. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, this is extreme enmeshment. So it took a murder for Wendy to wake up and have this process of distancing start, but it's really a good thing.
What do you, when we look at the character of Wendy, and I'm still kind of stuck. I don't know. I teeter both ways on, did she know something? Did she not know something? Or what did she know? And what is that something? Because you go one step into the onion on this case, then there's 50 other layers to peel back and 50 other directions it could go. But I do wonder if Wendy had knowledge of what was going to happen, or if she is someone who knew her family was up to something, but it was going to happen regardless of what she said, yay or nay. They were going to do what they were going to do. What's your take on Wendy this round, now that we've seen more of her testimony and testimony of some of the siblings and the boyfriend?
Yeah, you know, I haven't watched every second of the trial testimony, but the bits that I saw, Wendy struck me as credible. You know, I tended to believe her. I could tell when she was kind of trying to keep a soft stance, to keep from completely throwing her mother under the bus. But it struck me as her testimony struck me as somebody that was trying to do the right thing. She seemed genuine. She's obviously an intelligent person and she can read the room and tell what's going down here. I don't think it's looking good for Donna. Mm-hmm. And I tended to find her believable. But yes, as far as knowing that her family was capable of mm-hmm. some pretty extreme behavior, but at the same time, probably not tuned in to exactly what they were doing.
How hard was it for you to find her believable? Because you walk into this and you understand the dynamics of, well, this is her ex-husband. It'd be shocking if she didn't know something about what was going to be going down. I mean, is this rare in a dynamic like this where other family members will hijack literally another person's spouse, if you will, because beforehand there was all this control of, well, let's offer him this money, let's do this, let's do that, to try and control him, all outside of Wendy's purview. It was just, well, we're going to do this, and I know I don't want to, but they did it no matter what. Is that common, or is this really an oddly enmeshed family, or is this how they all work? Just doesn't always go to the point of murder.
It is odd, you know, to take it to this extreme. And I can't say I've seen a lot of enmeshed families, often families from different cultures. Asian families have a very, a more controlling style where the parents mm-hmm. are dictating marriage partners and all that sort of thing. But to take it to this level with this sort of, I mean, as I keep saying, it's sort of like the Miami Mafia. I mean, mm-hmm. it really is unusual, which is why everybody finds it so fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Robert admitted his mother told him not to talk to the FBI after the murder, and just kind of a throwaway call. He was one where, well, they talk on holidays, it's an anniversary. And he did anyway. He actually already talked to them by the time that Donna said, don't talk to the FBI. And Donna's reaction was, well, you don't know anything anyway, after he said, I've already talked to them. What does that say to you about Donna? It's easy to read into that and go, oh gosh, she must know something. Or, I mean, it could be an aloof comment as well. Well, you don't know anything anyway. You weren't part of this, and I wasn't part of this, so you wouldn't know anything. One could twist it around a little bit and make it sound innocent, but is it that innocent?
Doesn't sound innocent to me. And my guess is with Robert, he probably does the opposite of what Donna wants, you know, and that's a good thing. It speaks well of him and his integrity that he does not go along with this.
Wendy has her theme should just be, I don't remember, because she's been saying, I don't remember to a lot of things, which, number one, this was a massive moment in her life, probably the most defining moment she will ever have of this tragedy, this trauma, all this that was thrown into her zone, her children losing their father, her ex-husband going away. That's a big thing, especially when it wasn't like a car accident or something. It was your family allegedly trying to get in here and control it. Do you really think she doesn't remember all these things? Is this really her in trauma where it's blocked out, cognitive dissonance is going into play here at an extreme level, or is Wendy just trying to really cover herself at this moment in time and not say too much where she could possibly incriminate herself, even though she has that agreement?
I think there's probably elements of both of that going on. And sometimes memory is very interesting. It's selective. Mm-hmm. And we all, but you're right, with trauma and stress and all that, we can sort of go into a freeze cognitively and forget things. Mm-hmm. So it could be some of both.
That's where it's weird because, yeah, you said she is. She's a smart, educated woman, without a doubt. She's an attorney. She has her stuff together. She's got a good, successful life. So to have that that level of lapse of memory seems a little bit off. But again, if you're on the stand and you didn't have anything to do with this and your family's nuts, I do have some sympathy for Wendy. I could see, you know, you're really in a between a rock and a hard place mm-hmm. here, with not a lot of ways to get out of it. I mean, at this point, you know, what is the best point for Wendy moving forward and trying to escape this family, assuming she doesn't end up with handcuffs on and is arrested in the coming months after this?
Boy, I would advise her to change her name. You know, that's going to be a hard name to disengage from. Mm-hmm. And if I were her, I would be doing everything I possibly could to distance from it, including changing my name.
We see with a lot of MS families and a lot of adult children of narcissists, even when it's recognized that that person is toxic, they are not healthy for you. There's still that inner voice, that inner desire for approval. I think that's in a lot of us, no matter what, no matter how, it doesn't matter what that approval is at the end of the day, we're still going to feel the same way, mm-hmm. even from an abusive or domineering parent. Is there still a level here, you think, in the back mind of Donna, maybe even Charlie, of not wanting to not be loyal to others, or especially loyal to mom, by saying too much? Is there a fear of losing that approval mm-hmm. deep down that still controls the narrative of what they're willing to say out loud about mom?
Yeah, very much, very much. You know, you're talking a lifetime of programming, a lifetime of needing to keep mom happy and to protect mom from her intense emotions, and feeling like as a child, your survival is dependent on having mom's approval. And so that's something I think that we all carry echoes of our parents into adult life. And sometimes that's wonderful if you have wonderful parents. And sometimes it contributes to anxiety and depression, as a lot of people in therapy. That's why we talk about what was your family like growing up, because that stuff is in there. And I think it becomes part of our brain, actually. So mm-hmm. we're left with, how do I continue this process of becoming my own person? And the things that I got from my parent that serve me, I want to hold on to those, but there are a lot of things that I want to let go of. And that's sort of the process of therapy for folks.
How much weight do you think the testimony of Robert and Wendy are going to have on the jury in this case? Obviously, testimony is very powerful. Evidence is even more, but this is not a trial where we're going to go find Donna's DNA on a gun or a knife or something like this. This is a conspiracy trial. Was she involved in conspiring to kill her son-in-law? We saw them both go back and forth with very, very powerful things. This is the one-off. This is the children of Donna herself. One's very evasive. One's very matter of fact. Both gave very damning testimony about mom's control, her reactions to situations. When the conversation came up, Donna just didn't want to talk about it, really acted as if, well, it's not my concern. We're moving on with our life. The grandbabies are here and life is good. How do you think a jury read the testimony of the two kids this round?
I can say if I were on the jury, I would be voting guilty. I mean, I thought that they did a very convincing job of showing the bigger picture and filling in the blanks. And mm-hmm. I'll say before, I had a pretty open mind. I thought, boy, this would be a crazy story if it goes that way. But I was pretty convinced by what they said.
How, and this is kind of broader picture in someone that's watching or listening going, I'm feeling familiar vibes out of the Adelsons. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are like, well, they probably wouldn't kill or didn't kill, or maybe they did. I never knew what happened to that boyfriend or girlfriend back in 98. How do narcissistic parents cultivate that system where children feel like betraying the parent is worse than betraying the truth and have it last all the way into adulthood?
Mm-hmm. It really is this sense of, you know, usually the parents are highly manipulative. They use guilt and shame from the get-go in how they control the kids. And then there's that level of emotionality. And you often see this in the spouse of the primary the person who's running the show. The mm-hmm. spouse becomes very passive. Mm-hmm. And so it's just this behavioral style in everybody in the orbit of you've got to keep mom calm, because mm-hmm. when mom's not calm, it can get really scary and unstable in the family. And so it's just repetition, 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 and it just becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be the overlying theme with that's what Robert said. That's what Wendy was kind of coaxed into finally admitting to, that when you go against mom's wishes, things get uncomfortable, things yeah. get dicey. And as we learned, her marriage to Dan Markell, she left, but it was more because Charlie and mom and, well, not Robert, but who knows what Harvey was saying, but there was pressure there. And she even said she wouldn't have left him had it not been for that sort of control. When you're in a relationship, or when you, this is kind of like a, as you enter a relationship looking for those red flags, how red of a flag is it when you have a child and a parent, an adult child and a parent that still seem to have that bond, that no matter what, well, we're really excited about doing this, but you know, mom said this, so I'm gonna do it differently. Mm-hmm. They're still following whatever bizarre, weird, things that don't even pertain to life wishes of the parent. Is that something? I think many will go into a relationship like that and think, well, you know, that'll change with time. When we're together, it'll be just us. Mm-hmm. Does that ever change? Or once that bond, and if you're a 30-some-year-old and you still got that bond with mom or dad, what are the chances of that ever changing into a healthy bond versus that unhealthy enmeshment with your new partner versus your parents that are still doing what they're doing?
Yeah, it depends on how extreme it is. It's certainly a common reason that people come to couples therapy, because let's just say one of the ones that pops into my mind. This mm-hmm. is a case I will never forget. Young couple, they had their first baby, and the wife was so angry because the day that she was in labor and at the hospital to give birth, the mom called and wanted the husband, mom's son, to come over and mow her lawn. And so he actually left his wife in the hospital giving birth, missed the birth of the baby, and went to mow mom's lawn. And he was not seeing that this is not normal and this is not okay. And the wife, of course, was completely upset. Yeah. I don't think they stayed together. This has been so many years back, I can't remember. But that was an extreme example of how awful this can get. But a lot of people do come into therapy. And the other pattern that I see is it really becomes an issue over holidays, that the family, the new younger family, has got to spend every holiday, every birthday with the narcissistic mom, or she has a fit. Mm-hmm. And so that causes conflict in the marriage when people want to do other things. The other way it comes up a lot is in when there are grandchildren, the grandparent trying to be over-involved and dictate every little thing about the kids' bedtimes, their dietary habits, and just sort of usurping, you know, the parents. And so can it get better? It can, but people generally need an outside perspective and somebody to kind of help them make sense of it.
Well, and that's the biggest problem with a relationship like this between like Wendy and Adana or Robert or whoever in Donna is boundaries. And even if you in your mind have those boundaries of mom's not allowed to go change my children's name, like Donna was starting to do. But if you stood up to that, Donna, I'm sure, would flip out and or be very passive aggressive and just make life a living hell. And that's where everyone's doing everything to please that narcissist until they realize their lives are miserable. And everybody's wondering why life is miserable. Well, because there's this one person in the corner that seems happy with the chip dip over there. And we're all here on another birthday when we wanted to do all these other things. Mm-hmm. That seems to be very much the world that they were living in. Does that parent, do they ever see the light? Because the children, the adult children can easily, not easily, but they can make those boundaries and say, nope, you know what? We're not doing Christmas together this year. We're going to go on a cruise, or we're going to do this, or we're going to do that. I know you only got this and you're going to make me feel guilty and this or that, but they can set those boundaries. Does the parent, the narcissistic parent, do they ever come back? Do they ever say, you know what? You're right. You should go do those things for yourself. Or is this just kind of something one would have to accept for the rest of their lives of, well, this is how they are. Let's not let it affect us. Let's go enjoy our life and not be controlled by their emotions.
It's a hard one to do, but that's usually the way it goes, is that the adult kids gain insight. They start to set boundaries. They start to do better. As I mentioned, they often move across the country because that's a good way to set boundaries. They just try to leave. But do the parents get insight? Generally not when they're that extreme. And they, thinking of other faces now, they turn it into a victim story about how their kids aren't appreciating everything that they've done for them. And, you know, woe is me. And so it's really hard to get them. It's always a red flag for me when, even when I meet people socially, let's say it's an older woman, and the first thing she wants to talk about in a social setting is how much she hates her daughter-in-law because the daughter-in-law just doesn't adore her enough. And I run into that a lot. And it's talk about red flags. It's like, that's somebody who's over-controlling, over-involved, and has zero insight.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem to ever be, well, maybe if I changed my actions, they'd want to be closer to me. The victim mentality, which it always has been for a narcissist, is what they go with. They just kind of redirect how it's going and who it's directed to as time goes on. Yeah, I can just picture the conversation in the grocery store. I'm going to guess, here's another thing, and tell me if I'm wrong about this. This might be a red flag too. When you have someone that you know that they have issues with mom or dad, and then you're out in public and one of the friends of mom or dad comes up and says, oh, you're so blessed. You have such a great mom. You have such a great dad. Because they've heard the stories over and over of how they're there for you in this way or that way, even though it's really not. When those stories seem to be overblown, that seems to be another red flag, at least I've witnessed in life with folks where you're so lucky to have those parents like that.
Oh, yeah, that's just nauseating, isn't it? When people validate that.
Yeah.
And it can really make the adult child, it can really be crazy making for them. How do they determine what's real? And my parents did so much for me. And yet when you sit with them in therapy and start to ask questions about what was the cost? Yes, they paid for your college education, but what was the cost of that? And they can start to get a better perspective on it.
The cost, therapy bills for the rest of your life. That's the cost.
That I can attest that is true in many cases. Yes, the rest of your life, you're working on it. Get that stuff out of your head. It's very hard.
Think about it. If you're watching this or listening to this and you're like, only you can help prevent a forest fire. So get out there and prevent the forest fire in your life. Nightbird is your new memoir that's out wherever you get books. And The Minds of Mass Killers, also available wherever books are sold. Siobhan Scott, as always, thank you so much for being on here and talking about these fine individuals that we discussed every week. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.